Hello and welcome to the Licensed and Queer podcast, where we're on a mission to uncover why James Bond appeals so much to LGBTQ plus people. Why not see 007 from a different angle?
Hello, everybody. This is Anthony Lowbridge Ellis, and I am joined here, as always, with my husband, David Lowbridge Ellis.
Oh, yeah.
MBE. And we are here. It's Saturday, 9th of December, and we're going to do our month in Bond for the month of November. We're a little bit late.
Start of December,
yeah, because we have a few things that are.
I figured what we'd do is do like this one now, and then we'll do another one from Venice.
Yeah, we. I don't know if we've mentioned, but we're going
a couple of episodes ago.
We're going to Venice for Christmas. We like to get away from it at Christmas and like just have me and you and not
always have an escape plan.
Yeah, and we do all of our stuff with our family like the week before, and then we're doing it a lot earlier this year. Like we're going out with your auntie yet tomorrow. And then other things. So yeah, so we're going to Venice. It was almost another Bond, two Bond locations. We almost went to Istanbul and then Venice.
Oh, we'll do Christmas in Turkey next year.
Yeah, Christmas comes.
Or have Christmas in Turkey.
Yeah. So we wanted to just do this one episode. We're going to talk a few December things and a few November things. And also, if you are trying to finish your Christmas shopping, which some of people are doing right now, we've got some ideas for Bond related gifts.
So the second half of the podcast, we're going to talk about stuff that's been released
and like then in the last couple of weeks that you might want to like give to the person who loves Bond in your life, and or if you want to try and convert someone to like James Bond,
all things we've experienced at least some of.
Yeah,
so we've tried them out.
Cool. We'll have a cocktail. It's not Bond related today. It's going to be Doctor Who related, because as we're recording, the final of the three specials for the 60th anniversary will be on this evening. And yeah, we've got a few Bond things. So let's kick off with the first one, in that obviously earlier in the year, David got his MBE for Services to Education. And in November,
it was announced in June. I found out in May, announced in June.
Yeah.
And then they made us wait until November.
Yeah, so in November we went to Buckingham Palace to collect David's MBE, and David received it from His Royal Highness the Prince of Wales, Prince William. But before we get to that,
isn't it His Royal? Oh yeah, it's not Majesty.
No,
see,
he's
that's
not King.
That's all the kind of, you know, all the decorum and whatever was the only thing that was worrying me, because I was like, what if I call him the wrong thing when I go and walk up and have a chat with him?
Yeah, you did have to have a chat with him, didn't you? I am walking around doing stuff at the same time.
Here. Are you doing dinner at the same time? Yeah. Multitasking as ever during this podcast. So, yeah, it was... Yeah, the Mr. Mitz, people have said, were you nervous? And I was sort of nervous, but only because I was thinking... It's like when you meet any famous person, I suppose, and that's not being disparaging because he's, you know, the future ruler of this country. But it was like, what is the etiquette? Because I had no idea, to be perfectly honest. And to be honest, it was just knowing when to bow at the right time, you know, a little neck bow.
Well, you could bow or curtsy.
Yeah, like, I could have curtsied, yeah, you know, in terms of gender, you know,
exactly,
equality,
When the briefing we had, they didn't say...
Some of the women
But they didn't say, like, men have to bow, women have to curtsy.
No, I think they're so woke.
Yeah.
So woke. Royal family, so woke.
Yeah. But anyway, the reason why this is linked to James Bond, other than the Royal family being massive sort of supporters of the Bond franchise over the years, is the day before we went to Buckingham Palace. We went to Buckingham Palace on Monday, the 27th of November. Yeah. And on the 26th of November, my parents, very lovely of them, bought us a tour of Buckingham Palace, which you can do right in the winter. So if you're looking about something that you want to do, they're doing winter guided tours and they're very good.
We did the last one though, didn't we?
No, I think you can
book carry on through.
Yeah. Okay. We just chose that day because it's the day before we were going to Buckingham Palace. And it was, you get a really great, knowledgeable staff member, well, there was actually three, who took us around the palace, and they take you to all the staterooms. But in one of the corridors we walked into, and it instantly felt familiar. And by this point, like, we were like the keynotes on a school trip where every time they asked a question, we're like, we know, please pick us, miss.
so we
decided not to answer when she was like, does anyone know? And I was whispering to David, this is where James Bond walked with the Queen in the Olympics. And it was the East, what's it called?
The East Gallery.
And yeah, it's the only, when they do lots of faking of Buckingham Palace, they actually never filmed in Buckingham Palace. The only times they've ever filmed in Buckingham Palace, other than for like the Queen and Queen speech at Christmas time, is actually this James Bond event where they walked.
James Bond is literally the only film production to have ever taken place in Buckingham Palace.
Yeah,
fiction film.
It wasn't the film, though, was it? It was for.
The Olympics. I suppose. Yeah, it's still Eon produced.
Did Eon produce that bit?
Oh, I'm not entirely sure.
Was it not done by Danny Boyle?
No, they must have signed off on it, though, because of the performance rights. Yes, Eon must have been involved because they own the performance rights for Bond.
But
yeah,
wasn't that when Danny Boyle was linked to be doing Bond?
Yeah, yeah. No, that was years later.
Oh, was that? Okay, cool. So we walked down that corridor where that James Bond, the Queen and the Corgis walk out just before she gets into a helicopter.
I think in terms of Bond locations, that's got to be one of the like most exclusive, hard to access places.
We also had the sort of really cool moment the next day when obviously on that scene, James Bond and the Queen walk through Buckingham Palace, leave and walk into the lawn and get in the helicopter to go to the Olympic Village. And when we were there the next day, a massive military helicopter landed.
So just to kind of basically run through the next day. So we had to arrive at Buckingham Palace for about 1:30. And so we met my parents there. It was actually chucking it down with rain at the time. So we were glad that they let us in not long after then. And then the actual investitures didn't start till about 3:00, did they?
No.
So you just essentially you were in giant waiting rooms, but like the waiting rooms are some of the most famous rooms in the world. And so they're these state rooms,
beautiful like
which you will have seen
drawing rooms.
It is where they do the Christmas broadcasts from, and all the famous coronation pictures, and all those sorts of rooms.
And then David receives his investiture in the actual throne room itself.
Yeah.
But yeah, we were waiting in the it's called the white drawing room, even though it's all gold.
Yeah, it should be the gold drawing room.
And we're waiting in there, and we were sitting on the lovely sofas, and suddenly we heard this helicopter noise, and everyone basically...
This was 5 minutes after the investiture started.
Yeah.
So we could see some of the investitures on a screen, and we could hear them going on a few rooms away. And, yeah, it was 5 minutes in, and then a helicopter very loudly landed on the lawn of Buckingham Palace, and out stepped Charles.
Yeah, King
Charles. So there was a part of me that thought he was like, I'm going to take over here, William.
Yeah.
You know,
well, when we left,
move out of my way, this is my job.
When we arrived in the Buckingham Palace, the Union flag was flying to state that, like, the King wasn't there. But when we left on the evening, the Royal Standard was up to show that, obviously, the King was in residence, although Prince William continued doing the investitures. And then, obviously, James Bond related to... After that, we went to Duke's and celebrated with martinis.
Had a couple of martinis
before. And had dinner in front
soaking
of...
Soaking it up with a nice meal underneath
Roger Moore's picture. Which we have in our kitchen.
It was a lovely day, actually.
Yeah, that was really good. And now David's got his actual medal, which is really fun.
Which I shall just wear everywhere, you know.
Yeah, we've done our Christmas
tree. Going down to Morrison's. Yeah, he's actually adorning the top of our Christmas tree because we didn't have a star, so we thought, oh, let's stick my MB up there.
Our Christmas tree is themed around bow ties because when we were in London, we saw the Turnbull and Asser
window display. Jermyn Street, whichever way it is.
And we weren't going to have a Christmas tree this year because we were just like a bit busy. But then actually when we saw this, we was like, oh, we've got lots of bow ties. That's an easy tree to do and it looks lovely. So, So that is our palace. There's lots of photographs on both of our Instagrams and social media accounts. They're at License to Queer and I'm at Remy LeBeau _UK or just on Twitter, Remy LeBeau, because I got there first. So the next thing, we did a Secret Santa event.
Yeah, the last James Bond 007 GB Club event of the year took place. We kind of came full circle with Cafe Society, so that's where we did our very first one in March of this year. Next time we do one there, we're definitely doing it when it's warm, because it'd be lovely to go outside and, you know, to sit outside of this lovely cafe with MI6 behind it the MI6 building, but it was quite cold. So we all stayed indoors.
Yeah, and we had, like, lots of drinks, really good martinis, nibbles, and again, like, really good conversation with friends and Bond girls. We also had, which I thought was really fun this year, little secret Santa presents.
That was such a great idea. That was Phil's idea.
Yeah, and, like, we got some really cool ones. I got a really good pan edition of
Goldfinger. Gosh, what a secret Santa present.
And I also got, because I just picked up more than one.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're only supposed to have one, darling.
This really cool pen that feels a little bit like a Q gadget. It's a stylus, a screwdriver, a spirit level, a pen, and it does something else as well.
The point was to do very, very inexpensive secret Santa presents, because the board members actually bought them out of their own money.
Yeah.
So the kind of notional value was a quid or two. Some people stretched that. So
some people made their own stuff.
I made little charm bracelets.
And what else did you
do? I was trying to abide by the rules and not spend a phenomenal amount of money, although I did then wrap things in gold tissue paper and all that sort of thing. Sorry, I don't know why my phone's going. So the secret Santa presents were lovely, actually.
And you did those cool little masks.
Yes, yeah. So, oh God, yeah, that was slightly surreal. So some of my secret Santa presents were masks of James Bond actors. So there's an amazing photo of Martin Bezic, obviously from Thunderball and from Russian in Love, walking around the cafe with Roger Moore's face on, and there were a few other people wearing them by the end of the night as well.
Yeah,
so,
totally.
Faintly surreal.
So that was in December, actually. So we're doing it out of order slightly. We're going to go back to November now, and it's a shame that not some of our friends were going to see this, but he had to cancel. But we went to the David Arnold concert. Do you want to talk about?
Well, it was the Manchester one that was cancelled.
Yeah.
So the
vibe of the thing was such a cool idea, I thought. The fact that, like, he writes these songs and then he kind of gives them away to other people and he doesn't really get to celebrate them himself.
So I am kind of that dangerously, borderline dangerously, like, unhinged fan of David Arnold's. So we have had a few interactions on Instagram and Twitter, and I have had a photo with him in the past. But part of me just think he's on the he would be entirely within his rights to get a restraining order out on me, because I purposely kind of kept my distance at the Birmingham show, because I thought I am going to do that thing which people used to do with the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, and, well, I'm not going to start throwing underwear, let's put it that way, but I'm massive David Arnold fan. The song shows, everyone who had a chance to go to those song shows, and I know many people listening to this will have had that chance, although obviously probably not if you're not in the UK, but he did shows up and down the UK doing the songs from the films, and obviously he did the Bond songs that he's written. But I will actually say the Bond songs were real highlights, obviously, but it was really great to hear a lot of the other songs, including things that had never been released before. So a song that he'd actually written with one of the Spice Girls, was really interesting. He actually opened with that one, and although it must have been recorded, it's never actually seen the light of day. And there were really fun parts involving some audience participation with some of the songs he's done for Christmas animations, like The Tiger Who Came to Tea. Hey, Tiger, which is, everyone had to say that, which
I like that one.
Yeah, that was a really good one.
And he really sounded like Robin Williams.
Yeah.
When he sang that version.
Yeah.
But I really thought he sounded like him when he sang that.
And then we also had the song from the film that's on the cover of the Radio Times for Christmas this year, Mog's Christmas, about the cat. And I don't know where the song fits in the story, but I've listened to the score, and Sophie Ellis-Bextor sings it on the album. But it was really nice to have the premiere performance of it done by David himself, which is
Cousin Sophie,
yes, Lowbridge Ellis, Sophie Ellis. So I don't know if we're related or not.
That's always my two truth and a lie. You know, when you have to do those things at corporate events, my two truths and a lie is like
Sophie, you pretend Ellis, you're related to Sophie Ellis-Bextor. Yeah.
That's my lie. But I thought it was really good, and I thought it was really good value, especially because I didn't pay.
I think I also bought the drink, sweetie.
No, I think I did. and I paid for the taxi. But actually, we got there on the bus, didn't we?
on the way there.
Yeah, we got there on the bus. I thought it was really good fun, and I liked hearing, obviously, the Bond songs. He sang The World Is Not Enough. The song he did for Mel C, like you've already mentioned, I thought that was really good. The stories were interesting as well, because he did that song for Mel C. He got asked to do a song for Mel C, and he was basically like, do you know who I am, right? Like, I do music that doesn't really sound like what she does. And I was like, yeah, that's fine. And then when he delivered the song, they were like, yeah, it doesn't sound like anything else on the album. And he goes, well, I didn't try and tell you. So yeah, I thought that was really, really good.
Shall we have dinner, because you just plonked it on the table?
Yep.
That's what you've been doing. If you notice the sound going in and out.
I was walking back to the oven and back.
So let's have dinner with a cocktail. Yep. And
then we'll come back with Christmas gift ideas.
Christmas gift ideas.
And tangential Bond of the month.
Have we got enough gin?
You got enough gin? We haven't got enough vodka, but I've got a shot of vodka in anyway. The Hypnotic's got vodka in.
Okay. We can always make up the vodka with something else. So do you want to talk through what you're making?
Yes. So this is a cocktail time, obviously, as we do in the podcast. This one is not a James Bond related one, but it is something we've been promoting on our social media accounts. This is called Gallifreyan Libations: Adventures in Space and Lime.
That's a mouthful.
Yes. It is a really nice cocktail that is Doctor
Who, otherwise we wouldn't be drinking it.
Doctor Who themed. And it's Doctor Who themed because it is bright blue, okay. Like the TARDIS.
And also you drink enough of them and you can see through space and time.
See through space and time. With the name lime, obviously, it's got a lime, like citrus edge. It's dry. It's basically a martini. It's a blue martini. And the way you do it is you get your cocktail shaker with ice in it. You get two martini glasses iced. And you need equal measures of about 25 mil of a London Dry Gin, because Doctor Who is a great British export. Mm-hmm. So a London Dry Gin, we're using Tanqueray 10, and then a vodka as well. And we're using...
Which you only had a smidge of.
Yeah, we're using Absolute... we're actually using the Pride bottle. So Absolute vodka. And then, which is a bit more difficult to get, but you can get it on places like Amazon and Specialist... drinks places, but there's a liqueur.
It's not too hard. I think you can find it on Amazon.
Yeah, that's what I said, yeah.
Yeah.
Hypnotique, Hypnotiq. Most famously on our website, we've used it in one of the Dine of the Day, Death for Breakfast cocktails.
Yeah, yeah. It's quite helpful if you need anything colour of blue, but not that really alarming sort of fake blue colour you get in a lot of drinks.
Yeah, and we do need some blue curacao.
We are going to put the fake blue colour in.
Yeah. We always use that because it makes it a bit darker. So we need the blue curacao, please. And you just need, again, equal shots of all of these. So it is quite a strong drink.
But we're having less vodka, is that right?
Yeah.
So this is the diet version. The diet Doctor Who cocktail.
Yeah. And then you finish off with the juice of a lime as well. And just stir it all together, put it in a cocktail glass. And it's a lovely blue colour and it tastes really, really great. Hypnotique is a liqueur that's fruit flavoured. It's really worrying that they just say fruit flavoured. But it's got a slightly tropical taste.
Is that brandy based, did you say?
It's got brandy in it, it's got cognac in it, but it's also vodka. So it's vodka, cognac. And fruit juices, but they don't tell you what fruit it is, but it does taste kind of like raspberry, pineapple-y.
Right. You can find the full recipe on either of our Instagrams anyway. We've been making quite a few of these since Doctor Who's come back.
Yeah, and that's like the excuse why we're drinking them today, because of the final episode of the specials before the Christmas special. But yeah, it's a really nice cocktail and it's really fun. It tastes amazing, and it is bright blue, and I always like... David used to say this joke about, because when we first started to date, I used to like Blue Wicked.
Oh my god, yes. I actually bought you some Blue Wicked a few months ago, didn't I? Yeah. Just kind of for old time's sake. But is it fair to say that, you know, your drink tastes have become a bit more refined over the last 14 years we've known each other, Poppet?
Yeah, but that's not just down to you.
Oh, yeah, it is.
All the credit.
No, it is, though.
And also my liver's probably got worse.
There is that, yeah. And we shan't draw attention to the liver complaint. It's definitely him, then.
Yeah.
Right, while you finish that drink off, and it does look mouthwatering, shall we go through our suggestions for James Bond Christmas gifts based on stuff that's been released in the last couple of months?
Yeah, exactly. So we recognise that one of the hardest things to do is Christmas shopping for people, but rather than go crazy on the 007 store and pay crazy prices.
Hey, we've gone crazy on the 007 store once or twice, usually after a couple of martinis.
You almost went crazy this week and bought some octopusy luggage.
Okay, I was not going to buy the octopus. Well, I was tempted to buy the octopusy luggage, and then I saw the price of the octopusy luggage. So
it's beautiful, though.
It is beautiful, but there's no way I can justify that.
But that's a good if money is no option. There's new octopusy luggage. I joke that David, like, if he bought it and turned up at the airport wearing his olive brown octopusy robe,
it'd be like, this man just loves octopi, octopuses, whichever. Are you stirring the cocktail with a giant knife?
Yeah, the one that I just cut the lines with.
That's so. I'm not even sure what that is, to be honest. Yes, that's incredibly dangerous.
So yeah, if money's no object, those suitcases are amazing. I like the carry-on and the attaché case, probably a bit more sensible for travel, because I would worry, I suppose, if you are buying that really expensive luggage, you're travelling first class where they don't throw your suitcases on the plane. But I'm pretty sure the
case is all going the same place.
Yeah, but I would imagine that if you've travelled business class, they treat your luggage a bit nicer.
Well, maybe. I wouldn't guarantee it.
So yeah, if money's no object, those are there. They're really good. There's a new Bond book did it come out yesterday?
No, the James Bond After Flowing.
Yeah.
So Mark Edlitz, who many listeners already know of, Mark Edlitz's previous volumes, including The Lost Adventures of James Bond, as well as interviews with other people who've played James Bond. Really great books, really great reference books. I keep coming back to time and time again. A couple of Mark's books have formed the basis for various pieces I've done. And I've got to know Mark quite well as well.
He's got a new book.
His new book is released imminently. The release date is mid-December, but the actual launch is until next Friday. But if you are around on, so that would be, I'm just doing the maths, Friday the 15th of December, you can come along to the launch, which is being hosted on David Zaritsky's Bond Experience YouTube channel. And in addition to David and me, another David, and Calvin Dyson and Joe Darlington, we are going to be talking around the book with Mark. That's kind of the official launch online of the book.
A lovely looking book, and it's really thick.
I had the electronic proof a while ago, and then the actual paper proof arrived this week, and I've been devouring as much of that as I can. What is really, really good, because it is, you know, it's probably about as close to exhaustive as you could possibly get for, and there's no stories in there really that I'm aware that Mark has missed, because it must be an absolute nightmare, because there have been so many Bond stories. There are a couple that I did not know even existed.
Oh, really?
So flicking through. But what's really great is, as well as synopses of all the books and short stories that have been written after Fleming, he's got his kind of critique of those, not in a kind of, you know, saying these are better or worse or whatever, but drawing attention to some of the interesting elements. It's definitely a must purchase, I would say. And I'm not just saying that because a couple of things I've written and done, including the Diamonds of Forever alternate scripts episode with Tom Mason, which is actually one of the most listened to podcasts on License to Queer. In fact, I think that is the most popular episode ever. That episode with Tom about Diamonds of Forever and the rough drafts of it. They're referenced in the book. So that was an absolute pleasure.
Another
one that you might want to get, and linking back to the very first thing we talked about on this podcast today, David wore a pair to the Palace. Is it London Sock Company? What's the company called?
I think it's London Sock. I always get the two mixed up. There is a London Sock. This is so terrible. If you can look that up just while I witter on, because I don't want to get it wrong. But stop getting Bond socks wrong.
And my colleague sent me a link with Gina Reed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's been so many new designs released of James Bond socks. London Sock Exchange, that's it. So many different designs. My favourite ones, actually, are probably the Scaramanga ones. I only noticed when I put them on for work yesterday that the golden gun is actually in golden thread.
Oh, that's really
so it cool. Actually sparkles in the light.
These are £12 each, or you can buy different box sets of them. And there's a new heraldry set as well. These came out a few years ago, but they've updated them this year. You can get the original collection that we had, which are all really cool. Of like,
you can't actually get some of them though, and I'm annoyed because you can't get the pink ones anymore. Yeah. And I've lost one of my pink ones in a hotel room somewhere.
Oh, okay.
So I've only got one pink sock.
But no, they do lots of really cool colours like purple, bright orange. And I like the Moonraker ones, the ones that are space ones. And they're £12 each, or you can make your own collection. And there's a really cool golden eye like jumping off the
Baron Samedi ones are fun as well. They're all really good. The heraldry set, I actually wore the blue ones to Buckingham Palace.
Yeah, you like I said, they're £12 each. There's different box sets you can buy, and there's a big box set called the 007 Anniversary Gift Collection, which is £70, and that comes with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 pairs of socks.
Yeah,
everyone likes socks at Christmas is a bit of a cliche, but I think Bond fans would love these socks. Yeah. These are really good, and also like because they're £12, I know sometimes a lot of people's office Secret Santa things limit is about a tenner. If you want to break the rules and go a little bit above your limit, I think that these would be a really cool Secret Santa present.
Oh, and we haven't got the whole collection, and also I'm well up for spares, so you know, if anyone wants to buy me. Yeah. Dropping gentle hints here, Anthony. If anyone wants any more socks, that's me.
One thing that you can buy now, but you can't do until February, is 007, the official 007 account announced that they're doing a partnership with a company called Hidden City. And Hidden City are an entertainment company that they kind of do like live escape rooms in some of the biggest cities in the world, and they're doing a James Bond one called Shadow of Spectre, and it's you can start doing it from February, but you can buy tickets now. Apparently it takes between 2 and 3 hours to do it. You do it live in London, and you just choose a date when you want to do it. It's £30 per person, and I'm really looking forward to doing this with Hannah and Maz. We will need to get tickets, and basically what happens is it's a 3 hour 2 to 3 hour experience where they will like text you stuff on your phone, they'll give you, and you have to solve clues and run around London in an escape room style, but as well as there's going to be like live actors around the city that you, and that's why you have to book the date you're doing it. So like there's live actors where you bump into, and
I have a horrible feeling this will sell out, so we are going to have to jump on it.
Yeah, we should do it later. Yeah.
Book so we should actually stop talking about it now, because I don't want too many people to get the tickets instead of us.
Yeah, but it's called 007 Shadow of Spectre, and you can do that from February 2024. And this interactive experience challenges your team to solve clues across the capital, embark on an exciting James Bond mission with friends to outsmart Spectre. Under 18s must be supervised by adults. And you can book your tickets by going to @thehiddencity on Instagram. That'll probably feature on a future episode of this podcast, because we're likely to do
it. We hope so.
Hopefully we'll do it during February half term. So that'd be really good. If obviously we already did 2 episodes about this earlier in November, but if you are struggling, you can buy gift cards for Amazon Prime Video, and you can watch the entire season of 007 Road to a Million on that. That's another cool present.
Which is casting at the moment.
Yep.
Saw the announcement.
Oh, are they? Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
I didn't just want to drop this towards the end of the episode, but yeah, we have a special announcement to make. 007 Road to a Million 2, starring being low-budget Alice.
Yeah, we're going to be in it. That is a joke, just in case people think. obviously, James Bond books. You can get loads of, obviously, this year,
the On His Majesty's Secret Service came out, Kim's book Double or Nothing came out in paperback, and the new amazing covers of the Ian Fleming books came out from Ian Fleming Publications, and they've released them all in a box set.
Yeah.
And that looks really cool.
There's only, I think it's 125 of them in the world. It's really limited edition.
Oh, really?
I thought it was really limited.
Oh, okay. Oh, my God. That's crazy. It's the first Christmas as well. I've just realised that there hasn't been a release. Are they all out now? Those really good folio versions that I get you.
No, there's still one missing.
Oh, which one's that
Octopus
one?
Octopus in the Living Daylights.
Oh, so that hasn't come out because I read the catalogue the other day.
Nope.
So, yeah, those ones, that's a really good gift for people. And that also, that collection, I think, includes Thrilling Cities as well. So it's not just the James Bond books.
Oh, is it?
I think it's Thrilling Cities as well.
Okay, I need to check that.
Yeah, or if not, just buy Thrilling Cities because that's available now as well. Any other James Bond gift ideas?
I don't think so. I think we've pretty much covered all the... there's so many James Bond things that you can buy people.
Just but... little things like bow ties, cocktail sets, good things for...
I've just checked, the books don't feature Thrilling Cities or the Diamond Smugglers.
So you need to buy those separately.
Yeah, yeah.
Like little things I always think make good James Bond presents.
I mean, it's 100, sorry to keep interrupting, but it's 250 sets, which makes a lot more sense. But that's still very limited.
It's very limited, yeah.
Yeah.
It's the, they've got a lovely sort of like slip case they go in, don't they? Mm, yeah. Mm. I always think little things like cocktail shakers, bow ties, those kind of things make cool little James Bond presents.
Is that what I'm getting?
Well. You're not, we bought each other a holiday.
We're not actually buying each other presents this year. Well, you better not cave on that.
No, I haven't.
Because I'm going to feel awful.
No, I haven't. We've paid. What me and David have done, we've bought each other half of the holiday. So, which is another James Bond thing. Buy someone a holiday to a Bond location.
Yeah,
which is what we're doing.
Yeah.
Oh, and like, we had a really great Bond gift last year from our friends Hannah and Maz. The official 007 calendar.
Mm.
Hopefully, if Hannah and Maz are listening, we'd like another one.
Dropping not so subtle hints.
Because it's really cool this year. Mm. The reason why I like it so much is it's cool posters from the Bond films.
Different countries' posters
and stuff you might have not seen before. So I think that's a great present as well.
I think we should just round off by mentioning things we've seen which have made us think of James Bond or have other James Bond actors in.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with... I'm going to cheat, actually. I'm going to do two. So the film The Killer, the David Fincher movie, was really interesting. And it just kind of make you think, oh, what would Michael Fassbender have been like as James Bond? And you know, that it would have been, he would have been really good as... perfection. Yeah, he would have been really good as, like, in the kind of Daniel Craig mold of soul-eroded, kind of wearied... assassin type version of Bond. But the actual one that I want to talk a bit more about is the film Saltburn, which we both absolutely loved, didn't we? It was just considering the subject matter and what happens in it, it's actually quite a joyful film in some ways. I felt it was.
I thought
it was kind of
quite disturbing.
It was disturbing.
It's like,
but
like
also
the
cathartic.
The horror of it. It's not a horror film, but like the horror, like the shock
horror
of
film,
it
I think.
Is like so over the top. Sometimes, like, you can't help but like laugh at stuff. There's a scene in particular, spoilers for a little bit of this film, but there's a scene where one of the lead characters is so sort of obsessed with somebody who's now dead, he like makes love to his burial site.
that's the best way of putting it, I think.
Yeah. But one of the reasons why we talk about this as well, it does star a Bond girl.
That's the reason why I'm talking about it. You know, otherwise, how else do I tangentially link
Rosamund Pike
to James Bond?
Plays the mum in this thing, and she's amazing in it. There's a brilliant scene where she's trying to like dissuade her family from thinking that she's the girl from Pulp song Common People.
Oh my God, yeah.
She's saying like, well, in the song, she comes from Greece with a thirst for knowledge, and I'm not Greek, so...
Yeah, there's been so much, which is great, you know, there's been so much online discourse around, is it kind of just reinforcing class stereotypes? You know, the director themselves was born with a silver spoon in their mouth, so should they be critiquing class? Well, yeah, obviously. You know, and actually it made me think a lot about the discussions around Ian Fleming, who was born into a wealthy family, It's a bit more complicated though, because he wasn't spectacularly wealthy initially, at least, because his mother was essentially holding the purse strings and all that. But it just made me think about, you know, how Fleming deals with class. And of course, I couldn't help think about some of these things while I was watching Saltburn. But it is an absolutely absorbing film.
I saw a really interesting article yesterday. It was from an American publication, I forget where, but like, do you know, there's that trend recently with younger Americans being a bit more conservative. Americans in general, like not to generalise, but like, compared to Europeans.
Sorry to all the Americans.
But Americans in general haven't, like, in terms of film classification, yeah, they always classify sex,
yeah,
as
that's been the case, yeah, for decades. And they, American films always censor sex more than violence, whereas, yeah, in the UK it's the other way around.
But in linking to that thing about younger Americans being a bit more conservative compared to their European counterparts, there's an article saying how many cinemas have experienced young people walking out the cinema during the bath scene.
Oh, okay.
Where he drinks the bath water, because they found it
I don't think I want to spoil that, and also I don't want to have a go at describing what's going on in that scene.
Yeah.
But I watched that film just kind of open mouth.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, we went there.
Yeah, but apparently a lot of people walked out of the cinema.
Whereas I thought that was the best scene in the film. And whenever I think of the film, it's either the final scene. Actually, we've just heard that song in a shop, haven't we?
Oh, really?
Sophia Spexter again.
Oh, I don't...
Sophia Spexter gets two mentions in an episode of License to Queer.
I think of the scene right before that with the respirator.
Oh, God. Oh, God. No, that, okay. Yeah, that was not joyful. That was horrendous. Anyway.
So that's your two things. I was reading X-Men the other day, and there was another mention to James Bond, because someone was doing Secret Agent. But the thing that I want to mention is... playing Super Mario RPG, the remake has come out on Switch, and there's a bit that I remember from when I played it originally. It never came out in Europe, so I must have had to play it on emulator.
I think there's like a statute of limitations now, don't you?
And I own a copy of it now. So
yeah, there you go.
There's a scene very early on when you go to the Mushroom Kingdom where one of the toads you speak to talks about being shaken, not stirred. And this game, let me just double check when it came out, but I wonder, because the localization would be done by Treehouse. And I wonder if this was a little reference to them having the license to do GoldenEye.
All right.
Because it came out at the very end of the Super Nintendo's life.
The thing is, the phrase shaken, not stirred is not copyrighted, though. So you can just
But I wonder if it was like a little nod to say.
Because Treehouse is made up of British people, is that right?
No.
They're Americans.
Yeah.
So, okay, but that's still an idiom that, I suppose if it was written by Americans, they would be probably less inclined, because in Britain, Bond is such a part of our cultural DNA.
It came out in 1996.
I think
they might have been making GoldenEye at the time, because I know GoldenEye didn't come out until 1998.
97.
The game, though.
97.
The game came out in 97 as well.
Trust me, sweetie.
Yeah. But, and this is, if anyone would know the answer to this, and I might message him, there's someone who reads your website, who's an amazing video game writer called Drew Mackey.
Okay, yeah.
He would probably know that. He's done a really cool article recently about, like, over the years, how Princess Daisy's race has changed.
Oh, wow.
He does lots of interesting articles, like, on really niche things. And I think he would probably find out. Cause I'd be interested to know if that dialogue exists in the Japanese version. And I know Japanese is very popular. Bond is popular in Japan.
Well,
I doubt it would be.
It was popular in the 60s.
Yeah.
And then as we explored earlier in the year, when we were in Japan and
you spoke to...
had a conversation with Inspired by Bond on after we'd been to see the Japanese musical of Bond, James Bond is not very much in the cultural zeitgeist anymore in Japan.
Yeah.
So it kind of, as I say, I think Britain is the only country where we can kind of reliably say that Bond is that cultural touchstone.
Yeah, so I wondered if that was like a little nod to say that, we're going to be slow, in a few months' time, we're going to be starting to translate and localise James Bond game.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Anyway, That is us for November/early December.
I'm not sure when we're going to record next time. Probably when we're in Venice itself. Yeah. It might be after Christmas or in the run-up to Christmas. But if we don't speak to you before then...
We should record in the hotel.
Daniele
in the bar.
Right, should we try and do what we did in Japan?
Yeah.
And kind of, as we go around Bond locations, record little bits.
Yeah,
right,
cool. So if we don't speak to you before then, have a Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah. All of that stuff is Hanukkah this week, isn't it?
Ended
on Thursday. Hope you have a Happy Kwanzaa. Anybody who celebrates Kwanzaa, have a lovely
You're not
going to
go through every...
I've done all the three. That's all the three for December, I think so.
Okay, we apologise if we missed one.
Christmas, Kwanzaa and Hanukkah. And for anybody who just wants to celebrate the winter solstice that's coming up.
Pagans. I missed out the pagans. I'm sorry, pagans.
Merry Christmas. Have a great one and best wishes for 2024. We're going to speak to you before then. In the meantime, you can follow us over on our Instagram, License to Queer, and also on all the social networks, including TikTok now.
Yeah, I haven't posted anything for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
I'm a bit rubbish.
But we're now on TikTok.
I'm doing anything more than Instagram and Twitter.
You need to watch our great thing on TikTok,
which
we didn't mention about the palace.
Silly recreation of Die Another Day.
Die Another Day.
Yeah, so if you haven't seen it, it is on TikTok. It's also on Instagram.
Cool. See you later, guys. Bye.
Bye.